Hey, you know what? I got something to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, what up? I missed y'all. It's Chuck. Let's chill with Chuck for a little while. So, first off, this is our monthly check-in, I guess. I'm hoping there will still be some We're Not Nordics on your way at some point, once we can organize that. I did just read that the podcasting app that we use will no longer support recording of audio starting in June, so I guess I gotta look into that. Anyway, what do I usually talk about on Chillin' with Chuck? Music and movies, right? So I saw three movies this weekend, but I think I'm only gonna talk about one. I saw a film entitled Madam Web. Do you guys know about Madam Web? I think Daryl and I forgot to talk about it when we did the preview, the 2024 movie preview episode, but this is supposed to be set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not an MCU movie, but it was sort of made to share the same continuity, but it's made by Sony. Sony made Morbius. Morbius was the Jared Leto vampire movie, which was bad, very bad. And they also have a movie called Kraven coming out later this year, which I know we did discuss on the podcast with Daryl. They also did the Amazing Spider-Man movies with Andrew Garfield, which are not well regarded. They're kind of the bastard stepchild of modern Spider-Man movies, because everybody loves Raimi's. Well, not so much the third one, but the first two, and the Tom Holland ones are very well regarded. So this is Sony's effort to, I guess, stay in the Spider-Man game. It stars Dakota Johnson, who is Don Johnson's daughter, and Melanie Griffith's daughter, right? Yeah. And she plays Cassandra Webb? Yes, Cassandra Webb, Cassie Webb, very subtle, who in the comic books, as I recall, now my heavy Marvel reading days are pretty far in the past, but as I recall, she was an older woman who was in a wheelchair and blind. But this time they cast 30-something Cassie, who is an ambulance driver, and she... let me just say in advance here, if for some reason you don't want this absolute piece of dog shit movie spoiled for you, then I guess fast forward a little bit, because I'm going to spoil this absolute piece of dog shit movie. She works on an ambulance with Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation and Severance, which I just watched and is excellent, by the way. And Adam Scott, his name is Ben Parker, and turns out he's Uncle Ben. This movie's set in 2003. And you get a portion of his sister-in-law's baby shower. Sister-in-law's played by Emma Roberts, Julia's niece. And they hit you with the blue balls moment, right? Where she goes, well, I'm going to name my kid. And then something happens and you don't hear it. And then if you have half a brain in your head at that point, you realize that the kid's name is Peter. So, Dakota Johnson... Cassandra Webb, her mother was knocking around the Amazon, which, by the way, doesn't look a lot like the Amazon in the 70s, to find a special kind of spider. She gets betrayed by this French dude, this really personality-less French dude that is working with her. He shoots her to take this magic spider, and then she gets picked up by a tribe of, well, dare I say, Spider-Man in the Amazon, who try to save her, but only manage to save Cassie, who I guess they just send back to New York by herself as a baby or something, and just let her be an orphan living in foster homes. So anyway, you cut to 2003. Which, you know, it's 2003 because there's a badly 80-yard line where Cassie says that she needs to watch Idol. And there's also a soundtrack with Bitch by Meredith Brooks. Breakfast at Tiffany's, Dreams by the Cranberries, and I think there's at least one more. I read somewhere that this movie was going to take place in the 90s, and then they changed it to 2003 to more line up with the MCU Spider-Man timeline. So that would track, because all of the needle drops are more Clinton era than 2003, right? So she ends up stuck in a car that falls into a river and realizes that she now has the most janky superpower of all time, which is that she can see a few seconds into the future. Then the French dude, whose motives are never really explained, he's just a rich, evil guy. He apparently sees his death every night in his dreams. He gets killed by three young superheroes who look so much like they're out of one of those cheap CW superhero shows. And so he's obsessed with finding them and preventing his own death. He steals CIA technology, which at that time was, I guess, pretty timely, that can surveil everybody, and he tries to find them. He does find them. Cassie protects them, and they kind of become a makeshift family. You have Sydney Sweeney, who I guess is kind of famous, who plays the kind of bookish, awkward one. You have Isabella Merced, who plays... Well, I'll be honest, I don't really know what her defining personality trait is. She's not well-defined. Then you have Celeste O'Connor, who plays the sort of rich, spoiled girl who's acting out and skateboards. And I'll tell you what, they did get her wardrobe right. That looked very 2003. She had very big cargo pants on and very boxy skateboard shoes. And yeah, that worked, I guess. You know, you got to say something works in this movie. So she resolves herself to protect these three, and what else am I missing? There's a lot of Pepsi product placement. Everyone seems to be drinking a Pepsi with the label out towards the camera. But yeah, they want to stop this dude, and they want to protect her. And okay, so at one point, she decides she needs to understand the connection between her mother and this dude, who, by the way, I think every single line of dialogue that he has in this movie is ADR'd. Like, I think he had to go back and re-record every single thing he said because his lips don't match what he's saying very much. So midway through the movie, let me back up. Cassie is wanted for supposedly kidnapping these three young girls. And she also stole and is driving around in a very beat-up yellow cab. So really, Lord knows what else she's wanted for. And midway through the movie, she decides that she has to go back to Peru and get some answers about her mother's connection with this dude. And that's all well and good. It is funny, though, that the guy, when she's born, the chief, I guess, of the tribe, goes, well, you'll be back for answers someday. So you knew that would come back at some point in the movie. But what I have a problem with here, right? Well, it's a couple of things. Firstly, she goes, I'm going to Peru. And then the next scene is she's in what's supposedly Peru, but clearly is not Peru. This was 2003, right? Anybody that was alive and of a decent age in 2003, I'd have been, how old would I have been, 19? She, in 2003, it was very hard to fly. It was not long after 9/11. The security was really, really tight. And the idea that this woman who's wanted for at least one, well, I guess three felonies, right? Because there's three girls, at least three felonies, probably a bunch more, could just get herself on a plane to South America with no issues seems unlikely, and it seems very lazy that they skipped over that. But whatever. So she gets back to the Amazon, which is not the Amazon, by the way. It's probably like, I don't know, some lake in Canada. And she goes to talk to this chief guy. Now, this is funny, too. The chief guy, despite living with his tribe of spider people in the Amazon, speaks perfect English, maybe better than me, quite frankly, and really doesn't have all that much of an accent, which I thought was pretty funny. So he explains to her that her powers are actually more, which I don't think he really goes into detail as to the depth of her powers, but whatever, she goes back, and then she crashes her... the villain guy is trying to attack the girls who are with Uncle Ben, who's not yet Uncle Ben. She drives an ambulance through a concrete wall, a second-story concrete wall, and somehow the ambulance still runs for a while. And then we get to a climactic fight, which is at, yes, a Pepsi factory. The Pepsi sign plays a fairly prominent role in the climax of the film. I'm not making this up. It's just all so fucking lame. So she gets blinded and ends up in a wheelchair. So you see that it's sort of a primitive version of Madame Web, and she'll become the one that some of us who didn't get out much as kids remember from comics. So that's about that. Dakota Johnson seems disinterested the entire fucking time. And I just don't see what anyone saw when they were making... like, the fact that anybody watched this movie and was like, oh, yeah, shit, that's ready. Let's put that in the theater. Like, thousands of theaters as opposed to dropping it straight on streaming somewhere is very strange to me. Madame Web sucks. And it doesn't even, like, suck in that fun way that I was talking with Daryl about the movie Night Swim, the movie about the haunted pool. That movie sucked in a cool, fun way. And also, The Beekeeper with Statham. Although, that movie just kind of rolled, honestly. But, like, it was kind of a boring, bad movie as opposed to, like, a you can sit and laugh at it bad movie. So, don't go see Madame Web. I give it... 2 Viking broadswords out of 10. So, moving on. Let's talk about some music. I've been doing this thing kind of for my own edification, I guess the word would be. I like to take on projects in terms of listening to music. So what I've been doing recently is I've always wanted to tackle one of those top 100 lists from Rolling Stone. Well, there's the top 500 albums. I'd love to do that with Jay someday, but we'll see if that ever happens. That's a big undertaking. But so what I've been doing little by little is I've been tackling the top 100 metal albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And I figure, you know, while I'm chatting with you guys, chilling with you guys, if you will, I'll chat about a couple of them at a time. I think I'm close to 10 in now. So, the number 100 all-time metal album per Rolling Stone magazine is the third full-length by Avenged Sevenfold from Huntington Beach, California, called City of Evil. Avenged Sevenfold is a fairly famous band now, but at this point, they were really... They were signed to, what was it, Hopeless Records? One of those like smaller punk labels. Yeah, Hopeless Records. And as I recall, they were more of like what you'd call a metalcore band, you know, with breakdowns and screamy parts and such. So this one here was their first stab at crossing over, so to speak. It was released June 6, 2005. Apparently, this dude, the singer whose name is M. Shadows, took, like, vocal lessons and things, and they were very... I'll read a little Wikipedia for you. When they began to write the album, Avenged Sevenfold turned to their influences for a change in style. The album abandoned the band's metalcore. There you go. When we started working on this record, we said, you know what? None of our favorite bands are super extreme. They just write really good melodic songs that are still heavy. Sure do. That's what they all say. Music journalists have described City of Evil musically as, oh, I love when they try to label things. Heavy metal, hard rock, progressive metal, thrash metal, and power metal. That is a lot of things. The album is partially influenced by European power metal bands such as Blind Guardian, Sonata Arctica, and Halloween, as well as Children of Bodom
M. Shadows turned to Ron Anderson, a vocal coach that had previously worked with Axl Rose and Chris Cornell. He was specifically looking to add a more gritty, raspy tone to his voice and worked with Anderson for several months. Okay, so my personal history with this band is that more than one person has been very surprised that I don't particularly care for Avenged Sevenfold. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine said, if you like Metallica, you should be super into them, which seems like a bold thing to say. So I was interested to listen to this whole record and give it a real chance. The first thing I'm going to say about this record is that it's way, way, way too fucking long. It's 72 minutes long, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4 songs over 7 minutes, and 1, 2 that just barely don't get there. And that's just, I mean, Metallica, who are my favorite band of all time, have several records that are 75 or 80 minutes long, and I can't name you one that I think could be cut down a little bit. 70 to 80 minutes is just too fucking long for an album. You can make your point in less time. Apparently, Avenged Sevenfold have never heard the phrase "brevity is the soul of wit." But so, and then, you know, beyond that, you know, I was trying to listen to it with an open mind, but because of that comment my friend made, I was kind of listening to it with that Metallica comparison in mind. And I guess on surface level, there are some similarities. Like, these guys do have some cool riffs, and everybody in the band is a competent musician. And the reason that I don't like this is going to sound odd, because I do occasionally listen to things like Dragon Force, like really over-the-top, cheesy power metal bands. But there's just something cheesy about this record to me. I can't fully... Maybe it's almost like they didn't fully commit to the bit, you know what I mean? It's like... it's kind of cheesy without going so over the top with being cheesy that it becomes charming again, if that makes sense. It's been a while since I listened to this, but track 6, I'm pretty sure, it's called Seize the Day. That is the song where I think they're really achieving their final form, if you will. Seize the Day sounds like a Guns N' Roses song, kind of. So... yeah, I don't know. There were, maybe they needed to choose a lane here, which eventually they did. They really just went full on arena rock, I'm pretty sure. Like, I think, you know, any screaminess or real like edge as far as that goes is pretty much gone from the music. So I don't know. I guess this is a transitional record for them. I would say I would listen to a later one or an earlier one, but I gotta be honest, I don't think I'm going to. This one is a pass for me, and I would not put this in my top 100 metal albums of all time. But hey, check it out for yourself. Let's move on to, as of right now, the strangest entry in this list that I've listened to. Number 99 is an album by a band from Little Rock, Arkansas, founded in 1994, known as Evanescence. It's their debut studio album, Fallen, released in March 4th, 2003. So my understanding of this band is that it was basically this woman and this guitar player dude. The woman's name is Amy Lee. The guitar player's name is Ben Moody. They wrote this record together, and then this Ben Moody dude immediately peaced out. And this record yielded their big giant hit, which is entitled Bring Me to Life. If you've listened to the radio in the last 20 years, you've heard this song. I thought about trying to sing some of it for you, but I'm not going to. And, well, I wouldn't say that Bring Me to Life is my particular cup of tea. I can see where it's a compelling song. It's very catchy. I can see why people like that song. But, you know, the purpose of me attempting this exercise is to listen to new stuff. So I was kind of looking forward to it. And once again, this is just not for me. Oh, man, maybe I shouldn't even be doing this. Maybe I'm too much of a hater. This band certainly has a formula. Maybe I will sing a little bit. So pretty much, I would say, what are there, 12 tracks on this thing? I would say 6 or 7 of them start out like a very similar way, where it's like some sort of keyboard line where it's like, say it's doon, 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 doon. And then the Amy lady just starts going, it started to get a little annoying, at least for me. I also had some issues with the sequencing of this one. I guess, is kind of an insider term if you're not into music, but sequencing just refers to the order of the songs on the record. Track 4 is a song called My Immortal, which I guess was released as a single as well. And it's basically just keyboards or piano or keyboard or whatever and vocals. And I just don't think that was the right place for that song on the record. Like, I feel like it brought it to a dead stop, and it never really recovered. And the weirder thing is the last song is a full band version of My Immortal, which actually, now that I'm looking at it, says it was a hidden track. Remember hidden tracks, guys? Only on later pressings. I maybe myself would have made the full band version of My Immortal track 4, and then made the piano cover track sort of stripped down version track 12. Also, apparently track 6 is a cover of a Christian melodic death metal band. That's the other thing. You know, no disrespect to anybody who is into our one true Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, but there is a, from the lyrics that I caught, this is a very Jesus-y album. There's a lot of references to capital H him. And I gotta tell you, that's not for me. Let's read some examples of that. Let's read from My Immortal. I mean, who else could that be referring to, right? Let's see. You used to captivate me by your resonating light. Now I'm bound by the life you left behind. Your face, it haunts my once pleasant dreams. Your voice, it chased away all the sanity in me. Oh, maybe this isn't about Jesus. This actually might be, now that I'm looking at it, this actually might be about somebody she knew who died or took her own life. So I apologize. Look at me, like, talking things out on the fly here. But there is a lot of Jesus. Obviously, Bring Me to Life is clearly a Christian song. And once again, nothing wrong with that. I guess it's just not really my particular cup of apple cider. So what else do I want to say here about this? Track 6 is, like I said, track 6 is a cover of some band I never heard of. It looks like maybe it was that Moody guy's other band? I don't know. They're called Soul Embraced. And, I will never, ever listen to this again. But, hey, look, I'm looking to expand my horizons. It almost sounds like, it's very theatrical is definitely the word to use to describe this record. And maybe that's something you like. And once again, just like with the Avenged Sevenfold, I almost feel disingenuous saying that I don't like this, because I like plenty of theatrical music. Like, Iron Maiden is nothing if not theatrical, but I don't know. I did not enjoy this at all. The Avenged Sevenfold, like, it wasn't my thing, but I didn't hate it. This I hated. And for certain, this would not make my particular top 100 metal albums of all time. But hey, listen to these and let me know what you think. I might just be talking to Jay here. But if anybody else is listening and wants to follow along and give their thoughts on these particular records, is anybody out there? Is this thing on? Click, click, click. I don't know. I've been talking for 25 minutes, and I mostly just bitched about stuff, so maybe I'll let you guys go. This has been Chillin' with Chuck number 14. Email notnordicpod@gmail.com, and have a great rest of your week. Bye.